Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today are Deanna Larson, CEO at Avera eCare, and Christy Sedell, Director of Partnerships at the American Board of Telehealth. Deanna and Christy, welcome.
Thank you, Matt. Great to be here.
Thank you.
So what I always like to do before getting into the main part of the discussion is to allow my guests to provide a little bit more of an introduction in terms of who they are and what they do. So Deanna, I'll have you go first.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. My name is Deanna Larson. I'm the CEO at Avera eCare, and my background is in nursing, and I've had the opportunity over my career to work in many parts of the healthcare continuum, from, you know, very high acute critical care to some home care opportunities, even being in schools and hospitals, et cetera. And so today what I have the privilege of doing is really being the CEO and supporting the team here at Avera eCare and provision of telemedicine, and also oversighting the certificate program in telemedicine that you're going to hear about later today. So it's been just an outstanding career in watching the development and the evolution of both quality improvements in the healthcare industry and then really augmenting some of that quality work as we do with our telemedicine platforms and programs. So great to be here to talk about that today.
Yeah, no, telemedicine and telehealth are definitely very key topics within healthcare at the moment. So, Christy, would you like to give everyone a little bit more on your background?
Yes, I'd love to. So, like Matt said, Christy Seidel, Director of Partnerships, and I have nursing as my background as well. I've been a nurse for 15 years. My bedside care was in behavioral health, the operating room, and primary care. The last 7 years, I went on the administrative side of nursing, and I worked with quality improvement with physicians on performance improvement with them and data. And I've been in the telehealth space now for about 3 years, working on with the American Board of Telehealth and providing telehealth training, quality of care, those pieces. So looking forward to our conversation today, Matt.
It's very interesting that both of you have the nursing and clinical backgrounds. So, kind of what did each of you see that brought you over into the to the primary focus now on telehealth and telemedicine?
This is Deanna, and I'll just talk about. I have a 40-plus year career behind me at this point in time. So, working in a lot of different parts of the continuum, and then going into administrative roles. I really had the opportunity to look back on, you know, just an individual patient and how they progress through time or their health situation, both in health and in illness. I think what really got me interested in the telemedicine world is that I recognize the power that it really brings to a patient, really having great access to care, as well as, you know, individual providers providing collegial relationships from them across a big geography so that they're able to bring that best possible opportunity as soon as possible to the patients that they're serving. You know, it was amazing to go from being a frontline nurse, if you will, where I could affect a few patients at a time, going into the quality world where I realized you really can impact hundreds. And now in this telemedicine part of the healthcare industry over the last decade and a half, I really recognize we have the opportunity to impact thousands and thousands of lives on the patient side, as well as the clinical providers. And it's been a really rewarding part of my career.
And Christy, have you had a similar experience?
Yeah, I would completely agree with Deanna. You know, just the innovation with telehealth and the need for it that we see. The access to care, the efficiency that we give providers and patients, it's a great resource to have.
So, Deanna, I'd like to pick up on one thing that you mentioned that, you know, which arguably shouldn't necessarily be surprising to folks, but might be, but the point that you said of, you know, having the telehealth focus, I think you said now for at least a decade. So how have you seen kind of the means of delivering telehealth evolve over that time, as well as, you know, its place within the broader delivery of care?
I think when we first started, it was a very, I'll call it a very one-on-one. So it was considered a very rural application, meaning that there were patients who lived, you know, kind of hither and yon, if you will, who couldn't maybe make the trip into a more urban center to get to some specialty providers. And so that was a very early onset, very valuable and very meaningful, both for the physicians and clinicians as well as the patient. But as we've seen it in the work that we do here at Avera eCare, we've seen, you know, really providing even in acute care, the 24/7 support. So supporting emergency centers, emergency departments, supporting ICUs and hospital medicine. So bringing a colleague and a partner into a community hospital who doesn't have access in their buildings to specialists, who are doing great care, outstanding care, and yet because of the population where they live, there really won't be the specialty practices individuals living there. And sometimes there's just not enough manpower living there. So we often provide that overarching 24-hour support. Might be the support in the buildings at night that are really supporting nursing staff or who's there frontline with the patients. So seeing that evolve from a very one-on-one kind of situation to taking advantage of a board certified ED doctor providing a collegial relationship clinical practice to an urban center where maybe the ED is really manned 24/7 by advanced practice providers and or family practice physicians who, again, they all do outstanding work, but they get into a spot, again, because of a less dense population where maybe there's a trauma that only would come into that emergency department once or twice a year. So really putting a few more hands on deck, if you will, eyes on that patient, and supporting the individuals in the room in the care of that patient has made tremendous difference in supporting that local clinical team, supporting that patient, and augmenting and making the work go faster, meaning maybe transferring that patient to the highest level of care. Our team is actually assisting to get the transfer completed while the local team is providing the hands-on care for that patient. So been an outstanding situation to see that go from, you know, really a work, it really is a workforce potential that we all need to understand. It augments the workforce tremendously, even in a 24/7 kind of situation.
Yeah, no, I like your use of the word augment and augmentation there, because you know the description that you just gave really sounds as if you know the kind of telehealth solution isn't being viewed as something separate and apart, but really just a part of the continuum of care, as well as just the overall care team, which really is the kind of the place that telehealth arguably should hold within medicine, since it is still the practice of medicine, the delivery of care.
Absolutely, Matt. So the really important thing is this workforce multiplier, right? There's just not enough bodies in some of these locations, whether you're talking, you know, destination centers, whether you're talking wherever you're see patients being cared for, there's often not enough providers available at the point in time that could be critical when a patient needs to see that kind of individual. So how do we be this workforce multiplier that can provide that physician access to that patient when they really need them within a medical community that is really as a team providing care, augmenting each other, supporting each other through this network of telehealth?
So thinking about kind of that network that you were just describing, are there particular modalities or you know types of telehealth delivery that you've seen be more effective than others in getting, you know, kind of the thinking or perceptions realigned as to, you know, the power and the benefit that it brings?
This is going to sound interesting. Maybe put yourself in this spot. We've done telephone. Telephone is considered telehealth or can be telemedicine, even by regulatory definition today. But if you think about the relationship you can have with your family if you FaceTime them, and what you can actually see by that video. So someone may be telling you everything's okay, but if you can actually physically see them, you see their sadness, you see their dishevelment, that you can tell they really haven't gotten out of bed today, even though they're trying to tell you everything's okay. I'm talking about a family member now. So now put yourself in this position of a clinician looking at that individual, or maybe even their surroundings, what's going on in the house around them. Is there, you know, I don't know, is there something that would clue them in that there's more going on than what is verbally being told? And what we often hear about is, you know, one clinician might call another, and it sounds like there's just a disaster over the phone. But when the receiving clinician gets to look at that patient, they can make a decision, too, with that person, like the breathing is maybe not that bad, or the breathing is worse than what you're describing. So a lot of times seeing that video piece really has become just a very important tool that I think more and more of us understand. It's a huge tool set for someone who's not in your office. It doesn't take the place of laying out of hands and palpating, those kinds of things, but it sure is another set that really helps in some decisions on transferring or ability to stay local. You'll hear many of the clinicians describe how much that has helped them over and above telephone.
Yeah, no, it kind of goes to the old adage of a picture tells so many stories. And I think, as you're suggesting, a video probably tells infinitely more, because it's, you know, as you're describing, you can see in real time and be able to, you know, provide that, you know, I think, as you were saying, that second set of eyes literally on the situation. And it's, you know, that kind of input and feedback can definitely be invaluable.
Absolutely.
Thinking about, you know, just as, you know, telehealth is becoming more commonplace, and I'm sure we can talk about how COVID has accelerated that, kind of before thinking about what is the place for telehealth within healthcare, I'd like to kind of come back to, you know, I think something that's been implicit in what you've been describing, which is, you know, how you've got all these interactions among clinicians as well as with patients. How have standards or expectations around how telehealth is delivered, or, you know, clinician comfort with utilization of telehealth, been changing?
But I'd just say a couple things that I'd love for Christy to talk about our program a bit more. One of the things that, because we've been in this for, you know, a decade and a half now, one of the things we recognize is, you know, a clinician's mindset is very much on getting in and understanding what's going on with that patient. And so, you know, originally they start with knowing that they're going to walk in a room, whether that's a clinic or an ED bed or a critical care bed, they're going to walk in. And basically, they've been trained to go in and make, you know, kind of that 60-second assessment and kind of get a sense of what's happening, what's going on, and where that next question set is going to go. So believe it or not, what has become really important for us in the entry into telemedicine, and this goes all the way from, you know, understanding regulatory to technology to connectivity, is making sure that our clinicians can actually walk into the room with ease. If they're stumbling over, how do I get my patient connected? I can't hear them. The light's too dim. The patient can't see me. I can't see them. We don't have connection. Those can be just really off-putting, both for a clinician who never wants to look befuddled, you know, in the front of or in the introduction to their patients, or how do we get them through that? And then also to the patient, they just don't want to, you know, get frustrated with, I can't hear, I can't see, I don't know what's happening. And so those kind of very, very, that's just one basic piece. It's so important with the uptake and adoption of this augmentation to the delivery model of medicine, that we get this good and clean on the upfront so that someone doesn't sour on it and just never want to do it again. So that's one piece that's really important as we adopt this modality of the workforce in the industry. But Christy, I'd love for you to say more about that, or what your thoughts are.
Yeah. So with some of that stuff that Dana just said, we've really been focused on the standardization approach of education. So within, like you said, Matt, the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, the revolution of telemedicine now with it, it really told us that we need to develop quality education and the delivery of telemedicine, so those providers that are entering those rooms or turning on a camera are confident in what they're doing. When we did our research, there wasn't any standardized curriculum for learners to take. And so what we did is provided and developed a list of competencies for healthcare professionals, whether you're an administrator, a physician, a nurse, social worker, whomever you are, that you can take this initial training that that will give you the basic concepts of telehealth skills to give you that opportunity to validate that you have the knowledge needed to succeed in that field. So that's what the American Board of Telehealth has started to do. We officially launched in August of 2020. We're driven to be that leader in telemedicine education and really provide the tools and skill sets and training for you as a healthcare provider, nurse, whomever, to feel comfortable in what you're doing.
And that definitely sounds essential, you know, kind of as both you were saying, with use expanding. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Deanna Larson and Christy Sedell. We're talking about, you know, expansion of telehealth and now getting into educating clinicians on, you know, effective delivery. So kind of picking up more on the educational piece, you know, what are kind of some of the core elements, Christy, that you are trying to focus on to ensure that clinicians are well prepared to integrate telehealth into practice?
Yeah, so with the title CORE, so C-O-R-E, it really stands for Clinical, Operational, Regulatory, and Ethics. So the, like Deanna likes to say, the basic life support of telehealth is kind of what our training is. It gives you the introduction to telehealth, so the past, the future, what do we see? The telepresent skills, that's really number one. You know, we currently live in a world of Zoom or WebEx calls, that your camera presence is always an opportunity to improve because you're building that patient rapport and trust over a screen instead of in person. You can't physically touch them. So those nonverbal cues are giant. Technology, that's what telehealth is, telemedicine is. And people need to remember that something always will break. And so how to work through that process. Also an understanding of the legal and regulatory landscape, as you're aware, Matt, that's always changing as we move. Licensing, credentialing, and privileging as a provider or as a nurse, so you know what your provider is doing. It's just good basic understanding. Reimbursement, you know, how do you get paid for that visit? What are the logistics behind that that you may not think about? And then another piece of our course is ethical considerations. So what are some things to think about when you're on a telemedicine encounter that could happen? You know, Deanna had a little bit of the example of what's going on in the background, or you see that they're disheveled, maybe they haven't left the bed. So maybe what's your next step? Where when you're in person setting, you don't get to see that side of things.
And do you see people able to kind of pick up and adopt, you know, those kind of, I'm going to say core competencies, fully understanding that I'm picking up on the acronym that you chose. And, you know, I will say it's a great acronym because it's, you know, I think as you were saying, you're really going to the fundamentals of what's going to really create a effective and useful telehealth component to practice.
Yeah, we've seen a great uptick of people taking our course, giving us the evaluation after it and saying, I never would have thought of that, or thank you for giving me that basic that maybe I've been doing telehealth for a while and you've maybe forgot about some of those fundamentals that because you're just so used to what you're doing. We've seen a great interest in organizations coming to us that want to offer that quality evidence-based curriculum to their staff and so that they know that their workforce is solid and they're trained and they know what they're doing when they, you know, turn on that camera.
I see it's interesting, and you probably have this experience now because of who you are and what you do, but the self-awareness of, you know, what you look like when you're interacting with a patient, you know, that's new for many, many providers. And you maybe in your past sometime have heard something about someone's bedside manner, kind of an old language set, but all of us don't know what we look like when we're interacting with each other. And, you know, with this modality of video, you can't help it. And so it's intimidating if you haven't really thought about it before, or really thought about how, you know, the speed of your conversation or how you come about. And I really think it's got a lot of potential to make a lot of us, including us clinicians, better communicators in general as we interact with our patients. So there's a lot of learning that's going on even in that very basic skill set.
It's kind of interesting that you just referenced, you know, the unexpected component or one unexpected component of, you know, kind of creating a new awareness around, you know, your appearance, probably both, as you said, from the clinician, but then also, you know, I suspect for the patients as well, there's, you know, mm-hmm. As more patients use it, you're understanding what is coming through. You know, what are some of the other unexpected areas that you find, you know, clinicians are surprised by as you're trying to increase their education around utilization?
Well, a couple of things I'll mention is, first of all, it's a little bit on the heels of what you just said. So, you know, eye-to-eye contact, we've always known for patient satisfaction. You know, you see all kinds of pictures of this where you may see the clinician looking into a computer or EMR, you know, doing some review of something while they're not actually having great eye contact with the patient. If this really is great eye contact with the patient, that kind of work I just described is done ahead of time. And so the patients feel very connected, which I think is surprising a lot of our physicians and clinical team. And even though patients feel so satisfied, it might not even be as long of a time from a minute's perspective that this eye-to-eye contact or this time in the room is together, but this eye-to-eye contact is felt very strongly. And they really, patients are satisfied, they feel very engaged. And so I think that is really surprising. I think the other thing that's interesting, because we've been doing it so long, is, you know, physicians are surprised at how much more productive in some cases they can get once they get their technology flowing. I think also that they're surprised what kind of patients are willing to get on this delivery modality, that there was so much ideation that, senior individuals over 65 or some age would not be willing to participate. And in many of our clinical practices, we're hearing those are the very people who never want to come back to the office again. So that surprises the physicians. I also think they're surprised at how much medical assessment can be made on the video and how they can make good decisions about when a patient needs to come into a clinic setting and how that can actually occur a little bit more convenient for the patient, and that those things can be addressed early on so that the next virtual call can really address maybe lab work or some other, imaging or something of that type. So I think they were surprised at how much it really supported their relationship with the patient. And, you know, ultimately, that's what many of our clinicians want, is that extended and long-term relationship, especially those in primary care.
And kind of picking up on the one piece that you said about, the scope of assessment that can be done, and I don't know if maybe this is going to end up being a little too detailed, but, you know, I'm just thinking of an anecdote that I heard from my dad, who's actually a physician. And, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, when everything was shut down and the only option was to see patients remotely, you know, having to, you know, out of necessity, you know, use family members or a caregiver who might have been nearby to help with, you know, a piece of an exam that really does need to be done with a physical touch. Are there any standards that you're seeing develop around, you know, kind of that component, or is that going to be one of the areas where, you know, I don't know if I can call it a normal world, because I'm not sure we'll know what that actually is anymore. But you know, in a time when you can have patients coming into an office, that would beg to have the in-person as opposed to the remote visit.
I want to be really thoughtful that I don't think that no one, at least in my shop here, thinks that this will ever replace in-person requirement for a lot of our healthcare. I do think that, you know, the individual physician is learning, in that case you just described, you know, dependency on some family members maybe to take, if it was an iPhone, to really show me their nail beds. I want to know, you know, what the color is. I want a little bit closer look at some part of, you know, if it's eyes they're looking at, et cetera. And I really want to listen closer to what that breathing looks like, or maybe even pull their shirt up so I can take a look at their chest to see, you know, if they're what's called retracting between their ribs or something, especially on a child, that would be true. So it's an interesting thing. What happens is you'll see physicians, things that they just know they're looking for, and they actually take in that first 60 seconds, like I said, they hardly know that they assessed it because they're so accustomed to just looking and understanding what's going on and how to go to that next step in the second 60 seconds, that sometimes they have to ask someone who's with that patient to help them make that assessment that they can't quite do because they're not in the room. And again, this never is meant to take the place of what needs to be done in person, but I do see several physicians learning how to use individuals who are in the room even to maybe tap on an abdomen or press a certain spot and watch the reaction of the patient. So it's just interesting over time how you see those clinicians using the hands in the room to help them with their assessments. Now we have all kinds of technical things where they can look in the ears and they can auscultate heart and lung sounds, and those are, you know, what we call, you know, peripheral devices that can be used. But what I'm just describing is what can be done basically on a video or a smartphone.
Yeah, no, and I think that's definitely fair. And, you know, and I think it was also very helpful, as you said, and I know we said it a couple of times throughout, that it's, if you have a true, I think it's if you have the true advocacy for the for telehealth, you're not trying, as you said, you're not trying to say that it's going to replace in-person care.
No.
It's, you know, an extension and a continuum. And it's, I think your description earlier was perfect of, you know, everyone's figuring out where's the best location for what type of care to be delivered. And that's going to take some time. But, you know, I think you're also right that, you know, when you earlier said not everything has to be done in person, and you know there is a lot of power from the telehealth perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I just see sometimes I hear physicians talk about it, I just want to, maybe I change the medication and I would like to know what the individual looks like the next day. Is their breathing eased up a little bit? What kind of impact did a few doses of that medication have? So I don't have to keep them in the hospital. I can take a look, you know, 24, 48 hours later and really see what kind of impact I've had. So those kinds of things, you know, you just really don't want to bring someone back into the office if you don't, you know, really have to. So, yeah, they're great. They're great use cases of that kind of nature.
Yeah, no, and I think the more that, you know, that you can have discussion around those use cases, you know, it's just going to help everybody. But believe it or not, we're already out of time. So I want to thank my guests, Deanna Larson and Christy Sadel, for a great conversation today.
Hey, Matt, thanks. It was great to be here.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.